I'm Blair Palmer, and welcome to the Punks in Suits podcast, bringing the leadership thinking, beliefs, philosophies, and practices behind punky, startup-y, next-stage businesses to you, even if your company's not quite there yet. Hello, and welcome to episode 13 of the Punks in Suits podcast. I hope you are very well. Anyone who's heard me speak or been listening to these podcasts for a while will know that most of my work is with big companies, helping leaders in those large organisations to rethink their approach to leadership at a time when it's critically important that they do. Competition today doesn't really come from like-minded businesses that look like yours. You might think it does, and they might be who you're looking at when you think about how you're doing in the market. But it actually comes, or will come, from companies that see the world really differently to you. So that's why investing in an innovation centre or just telling your people to take more risks, because that's what you see these disruptive organisations doing, won't work. Baked into their DNA is a completely different set of priorities, a different way of seeing their purpose in the world, and a different motivation for going to work every day. In today's interview with Lawrence McCarhill, one of the founders of the Happy Startup Business School based in Brighton in the UK, we get inside the mind of this tribe of rule breakers and game changers.
For us, it's really like tuning into who you are and what you can bring to the world and doing it before it's too late, you know, not waiting until something negative happens or you get to the end of your life and have loads of regrets. So we're really, really driven by that, I think, to actually make people realise what's important and to act on it, not to give it up. You know, what does life look like when you do that, when you act on what you believe in and you're true to your values daily?
If you run your own small business or are thinking of going it alone, you'll find this conversation interesting because we work through the stages of the Happy Startup Canvas, which is a one-page business plan template that starts with meaning and purpose as the very first question. But if you aren't in the small business or startup world, and I think most of my listeners aren't in that world, I think you'll find it fascinating to get this insight into how these guys think. Because if you don't get to spend much time in the company of people like Lawrence and his community, and most of your influences are from the world of big business, it might be quite unusual for you to hear how these guys speak. And I'd be really curious to know what you notice about how the mindset differs. So, without further delay, let's go over to the interview.
Lawrence, hi, it's great to speak to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here today. Thanks for the invite, Blair.
It's my pleasure. So there's so much that I want to talk to you about, but the place that I want to start is you're the Happy Startup School. And I'm really interested in this word happy. It's not a word that we use very often in business.
No.
It's kind of soft and fluffy, a bit underused. Certainly people are a bit cynical about it. What made you call your company Happy Startup?
Well, great question. So I think happiness, or the word happy itself, is quite a loaded word, I think. It can polarise people a little bit. I mean, when we started out just over 3 years ago, we were a bit disillusioned with the startup world. So I think when we started to explore more about positive psychology and how people, what makes people tick, I think happiness just kept coming up for us. You know, why are we here? What's the purpose of life almost? And we just found that the existing startup world and business narrative was very much focused on profits at all costs. And we struck on something when we thought about actually, you know, what we're passionate about. And we were passionate about business, but we were also passionate about people too. And I think for me, the happy bit is really about various things, and it's layered. I think it's not just about walking around with a big smile on your face every day, and that's a bit of a myth. I think that happiness is about that. It's about something much deeper, which for me is about purpose. It's about your values. It's about putting people before anything else. And so, yeah, there's a great line which we quoted, and I can never find the source of the quote, which is, in the absence of values, all decisions go down to profits, which you know, we've seen ourselves from working with companies in the past, but also see a lot now. And so that's the difference for me between the happy startup and a normal startup is, you know, we're focused on the impact and the people we're trying to work with, as well as ourselves, not just on the bottom line.
So it's interesting. We spent the day together yesterday, didn't we? Coincidentally.
Exactly.
At a workshop on nonviolent communication, although we weren't that keen on some of the language around that. But and I will be talking to Max, actually, who ran that workshop, about those concepts in a future podcast. So we'll come back to that. But you said something funny about happy, which is that you're not really known for your smile. So when you think of happy, although you're smiling now and it's lovely.
Yes.
When you think of happy now, as opposed to maybe in your previous career, in your previous businesses, what's different for you now? What's making you happy?
Well, go back to your first point. I think a lot of my friends find it funny that I started the Happy Startup School because, yeah, like you said, I'm not a naturally bubbly person. But in answer to your question, I think for me, it's really about, it's a feeling. It's a feeling of fulfillment. It's a feeling of impact, much more so than, you know, the external sort of view of things. So you can look great on the outside, but you might not feel good on the inside. So there's little things for me that make me happy, and that could be not having to set the alarm clock in the morning, even though I've got two young kids, which I don't need to set the alarm clock. But the idea of I have to be somewhere by a certain time, or, you know, I have to respond to this email from this client. And I think that's the difference from us running our agency. So we ran an agency for close to 10 years before we started last year to move away from that to focus on the Happy Startup School full time. For me, the passion for that business had just started slowly to erode. Not because we didn't enjoy working with the people we worked with. You know, there'd be some lovely clients and we were getting paid well to do it. It was really just, we had this vision for Happy Startup School that started on the side, and it started as a side project. And I think almost as soon as that was incubated, it took my attention certainly away from the business we were running, and it just felt so much bigger and broader and more exciting. And then as a result, the thing that was making money, which was our existing business, just felt a bit of a burden and actually not fun anymore, which was a real challenge because obviously you're paying the bills through this business and it's kind of served you for a long time, but those needs have changed. You know, talking back to MVC yesterday, you know, it's all about working with needs, and I think our needs, both myself and Carlos, who set up the company, had grown and evolved, and we had to explore what does that look like when we, you know, accept that and understand that maybe those needs have been served for the original reason we started that business, and that's quite tough, I think, when you realise that, especially when there's people involved.
What are the needs then that are driving this new project?
Well, I think the first thing was, before we came up with the idea of the Happy Startup School, we had experimented with a lot of other side projects before that. So myself and Carlos were makers. I was a designer. He was a programmer. We got a small agency, which was, you know, team of developers and designers too. So we had the big capability to turn around ideas quite quickly. And obviously, we had people coming to us with ideas that they wanted to turn into products. So the natural idea for us was, okay, well, we don't want to be doing this forever. We don't want to be doing, you know, building other people's visions as nice as it is. We're creative and, you know, experienced enough to have our own ideas too. So we'd all loved the idea of having a product of our own, whether that was digital or physical, but a thing that we could scale without it scaling the team. You know, the idea that we're not just selling our time anymore, but we're creating a product business. So that we see a lot of that with people who run agencies. You know, they get a bit disillusioned client work, but then want to use those skills to actually create more impact or create a more better lifestyle, whatever it is they're trying to do. So we'd kind of experimented a bit with some ideas before that, some good ideas, some terrible ones, and nothing really stuck, because, you know, you're sacrificing your client time for innovation, essentially, aren't you? So if you can justify that from the kind of the culture benefit or the benefit from the bottom line, but ultimately you want something that's going to stick. And the Happy Startup School for us was the first thing we did that really felt like, wow, this is almost a responsibility we have to honor that. It's like it felt like a gift to me. It sounds a bit corny, but it felt like, yeah, we landed upon this. We were the right people to deliver on the vision, and it's our job to do that, you know, in a positive way. And so the needs for me were less about autonomy, which is one of the things that came up when we first started the business. One of the reasons I think a lot of people start anything is, you know, if it's trying to be their own bosses, they want to have that autonomy about the work they do. So once that need had been fulfilled to a certain extent, then it was really about impact, I think, was one of the big ones, to sort of share our values, I think, with the world. And that was really about, this is what we think is important, and we see people doing business very differently, and we don't really resonate with that, and we don't really feel at home in other networks. You know, we feel like we're putting on a front to try and be that person when we're not natural entrepreneurs, I would say, or just certainly the traditional sense of what you consider an entrepreneur, a bit more ruthless and, hard-nosed. Yeah, it was just creating a different narrative. So for me, it was a creation process, you know, actually creating something that, rather than fighting against what exists, tried to create something new that is the way we want to see the world. And so that's the strongest way I can find to make a stand against something is create an alternative rather than moan about what exists. Even though you can, I'm quite happy to do that too. But
fun over a drink normally.
Exactly, but. But yeah, I can find complaining draining. So I would like to turn that into some sort of action.
So I want to ask about the business, but I want to do a little experiment, because you have a business canvas mm-hmm. that you've developed with 7 elements.
Yeah.
So rather than me just asking you random questions to get you to kind of describe the business, I thought I might take you through your own process.
I love it.
Tell me about this tool. How do you use this?
I mean, this really came about from us working with a lot of startups in the agency. So before we even set up the startup school, we were having a lot of entrepreneurs come to us with their ideas to turn these into, you know, world-changing businesses. Generally, you know, they wanted to be the next Facebook, but had very little grounding to base that upon. So we wanted to add some structures to those conversations and to those workshops. So it wasn't just about, you know, here's a brief, which generally was the case. They come to us with a brief of what they thought they wanted us to build, and they just wanted us to quote and then deliver on that brief, which, you know, for maybe a website or a marketing campaign, that can work because you just execute on the thing that's known and you know what you're trying to do. When it's about creating an innovative product and trying to start a new business, then essentially it's just complete fiction because you don't really know what's going to work. So we started to work with a business model canvas and a thing called the Lean Canvas, which again, just one-page business plans that just get ideas out of the founder's or team's head onto some physical form. So you put it on the wall or do it virtually, but ideally something that you can talk around, and it breaks down the vision into concrete steps. So we worked with those tools for a while, but actually found the bit that was missing was the why. You know, it was lots about the solution and the value proposition and the customers, revenue models, all those things that are important, but no reason why this business exists in the first place, and no soul to it, you know, no human to it, humanity to it. So I think that was where we came in with the Happy Startup Canvases. How can we take the good bits of this lean startup approach, which a lot of people use, about how can we move quickly and innovate, but at the same time, not lose sight of the fact that we're all human beings and trying to build something, you know, for a reason. So that's where we got started. The bottom part of the pyramid on the canvas is more the mechanics of the business, and the top part is more about the why and the story behind it, you know, what's driving it. And that's not just the fluffy stuff, as you said, you know, it is the happy side, but it's about, you know, creating a connection with people, creating an emotional connection, and actually, as a result, having a stronger brand, having a stronger culture. So it's not just the right thing to do, it's actually, it makes perfect business sense to approach things in that way, and not just then, which you see a lot of people do, try and retrofit that in afterwards. You know, oh, we love our customers, or we love our staff, you know, once they've got funding in or whatever it might be, but it's hard to retrofit that later. So we try and get people to bake that into the DNA from the start.
Yeah. So your first question you ask is around purpose and vision. Mm-hmm. As you said, the why, what is it? What is the change that you want to see in the world, or even why you're doing what you're doing, even from a more personal perspective? So what's your purpose, your vision for Happy Startup?
If only we'd thought about that. But the irony is with these things, a lot of the time we create them for other people. We don't often revisit them as much as
that. Right, I know.
But luckily we get this question asked quite a lot. Well, in terms of our vision, I think it is really about, not just about business, to be honest, about having a happier, more connected world. You know, we got our school element, which is the learning and the programs we offer, but really the value of what we're doing is the community, and we get people coming into the community who aren't startups, who aren't, you know, business owners even. They just feel connected to the ethos of what we're trying to do. So the vision really is, how can we be more cohesive as a society and create happier workplaces, happier communities, you know, happier families? And we believe that if you're happy at work, then that is a kind of ripple effect that will ripple positively into your life, but, you know, ideally not seeing those two separate things, but actually integrated. So that's the vision, is, you know, it started out with just how can we create happier workplaces and explore that. But I think we've realized the vision is much broader than that, given that it's not just about the workplace. You know, it's about how can we understand what's important in life and actually build our life and careers around that. And the purpose is much more focused on the individual, really, because we found that working with startup founders, you know, people talk about business and ideas and all these things, but actually it's about people. It's about someone who's got a need, like we talked about at the beginning. So for us, it's trying to help people tap into those and actually realize those and have the support tools, whatever they need to be able to bring those to life. For us, it's really like tuning into who you are and what you can bring to the world and doing it before it's too late, you know, not waiting until something negative happens or you get to the end of your life and have loads of regrets. So we're really, really driven by that, I think, to actually make people realize what's important and to act on it, not to give it up. But we find when more and more people do that, and that's what we're trying to do by, you know, going all in for the Happy Startup School, is, you know, what does life look like when you do that, when you act on what you believe in and you're true to your values daily?
How are you keeping that alive? I mean, you know, in a traditional company, when they do a sort of offsite and they come up with a new vision, it's sticking posters on the wall and, you know, everyone's got a little card that's got the vision on it and that kind of thing. I didn't see any sign of that yesterday when I was in your offices, although I did see a lot of imagery and wall art and happy and all of that. So is it part of the conversation every day? Is that how you're keeping that purpose and that vision alive? Or is it so much a part of you and the people that you bring in that you don't even need to?
It's tricky that. I mean, we have regular check-ins. I'd say we have monthly check-ins as a team where we really try and connect or reconnect with the purpose. So, you know, assessing the projects we're doing, you know, how we're doing them, does it align with that? You know, does it align with our values too? So for me, those things are important to keep checking in with. It's that pulse, I think, where you have the big sort of catch-ups, which are easy to do once, you know, going away day somewhere, but it's the daily and weekly sort of check-ins, which I think are harder to do. Yeah, there could be some weeks where you don't deliver on the purpose, it feels like, but you're doing a lot of groundwork to deliver something that will be really impactful. So, for example, our summer camp is a three-day event that we run once a year. Next year will be our fifth year of running it, and it's 6 months of work at least, and it's incredibly rewarding, but really hard work. And there could be an awful lot of time where you're not actually doing, you know, we're not feeling like we're making much impact. And then we have a weekend where 150 people come together and, you know, you lose count of the amount of people who say it's life-changing. So that, then you go, okay, of course, yeah, that's why we do what we do. But there's an awful lot of time where you're doubting yourself when you don't get that feeling daily, so therefore you're questioning it. Yeah, if someone's cracked it, let me know about how you can continually feel that energy of, you know, living your purpose. Because there's always tough days, whatever business you run. There's, you know, I did a VAT return last night. You know, that's never going to be exciting.
It doesn't feel hugely purposeful.
No, exactly. Even if you're really in tune to why it's important, you know, there's still a significant amount of menial tasks which are never fun.
Let's move on to the second bit of the canvas then. Okay. So this is values, yes. where the organization, the founder, whoever it might be, gets really clear on their core values. So I've talked in one of my podcasts already about what values mean to me. What do they mean to you, and what are yours?
So we think of it in terms of essentially, how do you think about the decisions you're going to make? What's so important to you that you're going to actually stick to these when you make a decision? Not just, oh, these are what we believe in, but actually you're going to actively act in a way that is aligned to those. One way we also say it to the people we work with too is, what values would you adhere to even when things are going badly? When the chips are down, if you don't adhere to these, you'd be like just every other company, you know? So I think that's one way to consider it. So for us, it was interesting when we started out, me and Carlos, because obviously we were friends for years before we started the agency, and we didn't sit down and work out our values together. It was only at the point when we first started to hire someone, we started to think about, okay, what is it we're looking for in this person? What is it that, yeah, is hard to put a finger on? Or what's that gut feeling that we have about someone? And so that was when we started to think about the culture we wanted to create. You know, what was the environment we wanted to create? What was the traits and the people we were looking for? And actually, what are we doing already that we need to explain to them, you know, about how we do stuff around here? How do things work around here? Mm. And so for me, that's what values are. It's like, even if you haven't thought about them or you don't think you've got culture, you do. You haven't put them down.
Yeah.
Just because you haven't, you know, we meet a lot of startups say, oh, yeah, you know, culture, yeah. When we get to year two, we're going to focus on that. You know, it's like, I know, you've got a culture, whether you like it or not. It might not be a great one, but it's not something you're giving attention to, but it doesn't mean that you don't get a feeling when you walk into the company of what's going on. So for us, starting out, one of our values is speak like friends, because me and Carlos started out as the founders of Spook Studio, which then evolved into the Happy Startup School. For us, it's been really important to just be able to be honest and open and just not overload any conversations with jargon to look clever or to, you know, come across as clever to our audience, but actually just keep things simple, really. That's what it's about. It's not trying to look smart, but actually how can we make something complex, which is like running a business, to something which feels accessible. And actually, when we started out with the agency, Innocent Drinks were an inspiration for us in terms of how they came across. You know, they're very sort of simple tone of voice, you know, in terms of their branding. So that resonated too. It was like, okay, this is how we are naturally, but also we've seen a successful company use this as a way to communicate with the customers. So they must be onto something. You know, the world's changing to be a bit more authentic, and their demonstration of that, which was then, you know, not just permission, but okay, this feels right.
Yeah, great. What else?
Make it fun. So we try to, where possible, inject fun into everything we do. I think partly because we'd worked in companies before we even set up the agency, and we didn't feel work was fun anymore. We ran the agency, and for a while it was fun, but actually started to lose that. So now we pretty much have a gut check of like, does this excite us? If we get an opportunity coming our way, you know, does it feel like there's some fun at the heart of it? Because otherwise, if we don't feel that at the beginning, then it's not going to be something we want to do when times get tough, because, you know, there's always going to be challenges, whether it's selling out an event or doing the accounts or whatever it might be. So I think you need that creative spark, and for me that comes from a sense of excitement about something.
I mean, running a business, big or small, can be really hard, you know, and there's a lot of, you're taking risk all the time. So this idea that you're asking yourself, are we having fun? Is it fun to us? And it might not be fun in this moment, but it's the intention that it will be more fun. Yeah, I love that.
And one of the other ones that's important to us is expect nothing back. And this is, I suppose this comes naturally to us. We're naturally interested in people. We're naturally wanting to help people, because I think we work with startups who need a lot of help. But I think it's one of those things when you give people permission to be honest and vulnerable, then, you know, people then open their hearts to you and tell you their situation. And because we're the Happy Startup School, not just, you know, a startup school, people often come to us who aren't happy because they're a bit disillusioned at work, and they need a bit of happiness in their life. So it's almost a commodity. They're like, oh, I want this, you know. So they open up. But that means that we have to be aware that our time is of worth something to them. So yeah, the idea of expect nothing back is help people without expecting anything in return, on the basis that maybe they won't be able to help you in return, and maybe they won't ever become a customer of yours, but actually you'll get so much more indirectly through that, just by being kind, really. I think that's what it comes down to. And I get a lot of buzz from that, and there's a lot of research that says the happiest people are the kindest. So it's getting away from that self happiness to actually the altruism of actually wanting someone else to succeed. And yeah, it's always going to benefit us, but you just don't know what that looks like yet. So understanding that it's the right thing to do, but you can't justify in terms of time expense, you know.
I mean, that's so counter culture in a way. And it's something that I'm working on myself, but I find it very difficult at certain points. So sometimes you are really feeling, you know, that you want to give, that you can be valuable, that you care about the people that are in your kind of circle. And then you look at your bank balance. And you think, it would be great if one of these people actually valued it so much that they would pay me, you know. And then you can really lose your direction in a way. You skip down the levels of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you're right at the bottom thinking about what you need as opposed to what they need. And I'm speaking from personal experience here. So is it so innate for you that it just doesn't happen? Or have there been moments where you've thought, maybe we just need to do a bit of work for the money?
Well, that the latter thing, it always comes up. It's something that comes up in any business, particularly ours. There's the easy way of making money, and then there's the harder way of making money. I think what we found is that when we try to force something or do something just for the money, it just doesn't feel right or doesn't work. You know, it's a short-term fix almost. So, you know, we're trying to build something for the long term, and it's you know, building a global community isn't easy. And, you know, we look to other organizations that have done it or are doing it, and they say the same thing. We aren't just selling something to a customer. We're not just a transaction. We're trying to build relationships. So it's that tricky thing of, like you said, you want to be giving with your time and you know, being, put it this way, if money was no object, this is how I would behave.
Yeah.
I always try to think like that, you know, forget money. What would I do if money wasn't important here? The flip side of that is generally when we're not trying to go for money, it comes easier. So that's what I try and always stay true to, is actually if we keep creating value, that value will turn into money, because ultimately what we want to create is value, and people will pay for that at some point in some way. If I'd have worked it out, I would tell you the secret sauce. But for me, it's just trying to stay true to what's important to you. Obviously, trying to make it viable. And I think the other side of it is too, not being taken for granted, you know. So I don't know if you've read Adam Grant's book, Give and Take.
No.
So a really interesting book. He's done a lot of research about successful people, leaders. And he spotted that actually the most successful people tend to be the most giving. Actually, the least successful people also tend to be the most giving. And it's about, he calls it being otherish. So knowing when to say no and knowing when to say yes, and actually not just being so giving that you lose your own well-being or your own respect for your work or whatever it might be, or revenue. But you've got a point where you say, no, this is my time to do my thing, but I've got this window maybe where I can help people. Maybe you've got 2 days a week where you just pro bono work you do, and then the rest of the time is your time where you work for your paying clients. But some barrier from, no, I can't just keep saying yes to everyone who needs me, because I'm going to suffer. And as a result, like you said, just lose energy or not be able to pay the bills. So it's a great book, because it really highlights that there is a time when you have to say no, and you can't go for coffee 6 times a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there's an element of, certainly for me, knowing what it is that I really do. So there are lots of ways that I could be helpful. But some of those ways are, no one would ever pay for that, in fact, because it's just a thing that people do for each other when they're being kind. But there are some things that I do and that a company will do that is what you do. It's your core. It's the thing that's delivering on your purpose and your vision. And where you can be of the most value, you can be of the most service if they're paying you, because then you can really focus on them. They've bought you then. They bought your full attention. And so at other times, of course, you can be incredibly generous and you can serve and you can be driven by exactly the same motives, which is to use your expertise and your passion and your value to help someone else to do the thing that they are passionate about.
Yeah.
But they can't guarantee that you're always going to be able to do that for them, because you know, you've got other stuff. So for me, that is the sort of balance that I'm looking at the moment, which is I can serve a bunch of people that I care about in these ways.
Yeah.
And that the best way for them is to have my full attention.
Yeah.
So next, for your story,
Yes.
This is quite interesting. So what do you mean by that, the story?
I think one of the hardest things when people start out is actually getting clarity, so you understand what you're trying to do, other people to understand what you're trying to do. And the way we think about story is, what is it something someone would say about you to another person? So it's that sort of third party version of your vision. So what is it that's going to capture people's imagination about what you're doing? And so for us, the story we've had from day one is, there's more to life and business than making money. You know, it's not about that. It's about people. And I think on our first website, we had a similar line to that, which is like, there's more to life than hockey sticks. You know, like in the US, you get hockey stick growth. And used our logo, which has got the smile and a little upwards chart. Mm. And that got a great response because people think, you know, everyone's chasing growth. Everyone's chasing, you know, IPOs in the US. So, you know, everyone's chasing investments, VC money, talking about numbers. And it's just an obsession to cut through that and say, yeah, but are you happy? Is it working? You know, is it working for you? Then it's like, okay, all of that conversation suddenly changes. When you read about burnout or, you know, the stuff that happens behind the scenes at the cost of chasing that. So we were trying to create this new narrative, which is just, okay, if that's what you want and that's going to serve you and that's your thing, brilliant. We're not saying, you know, high growth business is a bad thing, but don't just look at it as there's one way of doing things. And what we're seeing is that success is different for everyone. So you can't judge your success by someone else's success. And just because they're doing exceptionally well or growing really fast, it doesn't mean that they're not struggling too. You know, they've just got different problems. So not being too swayed by that. And for me, that's understanding what matters really to you.
So problems. Now this is, I actually went through this process myself.
Mm-hmm.
The other day when I was preparing for this interview, and this was the bit of the canvas that felt a bit like stuff I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're looking at what are the top three problems or mm-hmm. opportunities that you're looking to address.
Yeah.
And so that would be quite a common, certainly if you were doing product development.
Exactly.
You know, what is it that this product is trying to fix?
Yeah.
So what are yours?
I know you've got your own business, so you could probably fill this whole page with problems of
yes, actually that was the difficulty was top three problems.
Yeah, exactly,
because there's a million.
Yeah. So I think, well, for anyone starting anything, there's a whole plethora of problems. I'll say the common ones we see, which we're trying to fix, is a sense of isolation. You know, our community, and this is easy in hindsight, our community creates a place where people feel at home and they can feel supported, be themselves, and open up in a way that we haven't found another setting. So it's one of those things, you don't necessarily know you need it until you experience it. But I think that feeling of, I've got friends and family, I've got loved ones, I'm not alone, but I feel lonely in with this idea because I don't have other people who have been through this. So, you know, if you're in a safe job, your wife's a teacher, whatever, and you want to leave your well-paid job to run a startup where you're not sure how you're going to make money and you want to change the world, naturally people will question that and say, is that the right thing to do? You know, it seems crazy. You seem, on the outside you seem happy. Why do you want to change this? But actually what they don't know is inside they're, you know, dying slowly. And that's the thing we see with a lot of people, is they come to one of our events or come on our programs and their shoulders drop. They think, oh God, I'm not the only crazy one. You know, there's other crazies too. There's other punks in suits. I think the other thing is people just don't know where to start. So if you're starting out, you can look at the internet, you can Google stuff, you can get the information's not the problem. It's knowing who to listen to. There's something around curation of what's important. They trust us. They trust our judgment. So therefore, if we're saying that's all great, but these are the things you need to focus on right now. So, you know, almost like a step-by-step guide of going from where I am now with an idea to launching something, what are the things I need to think about? And I'd say the other thing is really the belief part. It's very easy to doubt yourself at the beginning because you've never done it before, most likely. You're not sure if it's right for you. You're not sure if the idea is good, you know. So you need some feedback to know, you know, or someone to say, it's okay, do it, you know, number one. And number two, actually, by being surrounded by other people who are doing it too, it's permission for you to feel, okay, we can go on this journey together. So I think it's the courage and the belief that we try and instill in people that is lacking at the beginning. People underestimate that at the beginning. They think it's all about the idea. Is the idea going to work? You know, is there a need for it in the world? You know, will people pay for it? What they underestimate is am I the right person to do this? Or do I have the right mindset and resources internally to be able to do it? And if not, can I scale up? You know, what we found is if you're trying to sell something that doesn't have some real deep problems attached to it, then it's going to be harder to put a business around, because you're trying to create a demand for something where people just don't see the value of it. Or it's a tech product that, you know, isn't really that important. And it just highlights to me that, you know, whilst solving some of the world's biggest problems isn't easy, there's massive opportunity to those too. So it does make business sense to actually do something that has deep meaning behind it for people and is going to make an impact for people, but doesn't mean it's going to be easy. But certainly if you can solve those problems, then there's definitely opportunities there too.
So what about the solutions bit? Practically speaking, what is it that you're actually putting out there into the market?
I'd love to say we just do one thing. Sometimes I mean, one of the things we talk about in startups is focus, you know, do one thing well. It's easy to say that. partly we get bored quickly, but partly we've got a big vision, right? So there's a lot of things to do, there's a job to do. So the community is core to this. So like I said, and the community can't really happen online fully, and we do have an online community, but it's, you know, events are where the community comes to life. So the big things we do are, like I mentioned, the summer camp. So what we found is if we can connect people face to face in a real world experience that inspires them, then transformation is going to happen. They're going to realize what's important. They're going to have the help they need by building these connections on the ground. And they're also going to, you know, be a bit bolder as a result of that, by being around other people who've done it, by hearing stories of people who've, you know, taking a risk, then they see it's possible. And so it's this ecosystem of people and ideas and the stories for them to feel connected to that. So I think it's the big thing. So where possible, we try and bring people together face to face. So we started off doing small meetups in London. That's how we got started. And then from there, we moved to Brighton and we started to build the space here. So we've got a co-working space here. So we do some small events here, and then the summer camp, which happens annually. And we also started to do some retreats. So the last 2 years we went to India and the Alps, where we take teams out there, smaller groups, like 25 people, of sometimes more experienced founders. And again, we're off to India again in February, and we're looking at doing an event in the US next year. And really, this is about, I think the common link between everything we do is we're creating spaces, and those spaces might be online, they might be, you know, in the real world, but they're spaces where people can explore, you know, who am I, what am I trying to do, and how can I move this forward. And I think that once we understood that, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a 4-week online course or if it's a 2-hour workshop, you know, it's creating that safe space where it's possible to explore those things, and it feeling unified as an experience too.
This I thought was really interesting. This is the sixth element of the business canvas.
Yeah.
And you've called it early adopters. Yeah. And I think this is really interesting. So what is this about, and why is it so important in this?
I think the main reason it's important is people often think they want to take over the world or have 1% of the population of, you know, the UK or the world as their audience, and so end up going so broad so quick and not really impacting anyone. So early adopters is really understanding who are the innovators at the edge who are going to love what you're doing. Who are the first 5 or 10 customers that you can get? Forget everyone else, you know, because ultimately without these people, you're not going to build that beachhead. You're not going to build a business if you can't get at least a handful of people to care. So it's really understanding who experiences the pain that you've pointed out in those problems the most, and where are they? How do you access them? You can then find out if it's not them, then I know who to move to next. But getting out of this mindset of I have to scale from day one, and getting into the mindset of I'm building relationships with people, and it could be, you know, and we even on our online course now, we've taken this a step further, saying, who's your one true fan? Who's your first fan? You know, like, forget everyone else. Just find one person to care about what you're doing, which isn't as easy as it sounds. You know, everyone talks about or gets worried about people stealing their ideas, but actually to get anyone to even care to steal your idea is the hardest part. There's a friend of ours who wrote a book on branding. He was speaking here the other week, and he said, you know, the best money you can spend is $2 or £2 on a coffee with your customer, you know. So at the beginning, just finding that one person who's going to become the person who's going to share what you're doing and become an ambassador for it, and then find another 2, 5, 10, 100, and then you can take over the world. But, you know, without that, you're going to spread yourself too thin and not really build that human connection with people. So,
yeah, it's really interesting, because there's a theme emerging from the interviews that I've been doing, which is about slowing things right down and, mm-hmm. and slowing your life down and slowing down the your intentions around growth and just this kind of taking the pressure off. Mm-hmm. And I find it so, while still having momentum and still making a difference, still wanting to make a difference. And it's so different to what I experience when I go into some bigger businesses, not all, because some of them are great, obviously, but some bigger businesses where it is hectically busy. I mean, frantic. And people are pushed way beyond human limits, really, to produce massive results. And of course, they don't produce massive results. The company doesn't actually grow that quickly, but there's this expectation that it will. And I can understand the concern about slowing down because it's just so, it feels risky that.
Yeah.
But just to say, let's start with one.
Yeah. You know,
let's go for a coffee. Let's have one of the things that I do with clients is leisurely, long conversations. You know, there's no agenda. I'm not turning up with a curriculum. It's not going to be handouts at the end. What we're doing for a day, 2 days, 3 days is we are contemplating questions that as they come up. And it's really risky. It feels risky for a senior team to go away and do that because we need to know why we're going and we need to know what we're going to get out of it and what are the deliverables going to be? What are the takeaways? All these kind of questions. And I'm saying, well, just not going to do it that way.
Yeah,
trust me. You never have to use me again if this all turns out to be nonsense.
Yeah,
but let's just do it. It's only 3 days out of your life. Sometimes they buy it, and no one ever regrets it.
Well, it's that void of nothingness, isn't it? Which is, I think, needed but scary.
So then you mentioned value proposition earlier, but the value proposition is your number seven, is your final element.
Yeah.
So is this where it all comes together?
Yeah, I mean, really, this is the hardest thing, I think, for early stage businesses to really explore is, you know, what's the value you're creating for people? Because there's so much that's uncertain. You're probably uncertain who your customers might be, what problems you're solving, the solution you might create. So really, this is where those things all come together. It's understanding how can you create value by solving the problems for a certain audience. So on our course, we have a statement, a sentence, which you can kind of fill in the gaps. And really it's about, you know, I'm creating this thing, which is X, to solve these problems for these people, unlike this competitor, for example, is one way of looking at it. So you're trying to say, we're creating extra value in the world as a result of serving these customers. But it evolves. I mean, value proposition is probably the hardest part of this because I think it's something that requires testing with the market, and you're constantly, you know, evaluating this and looking at it and exploring, okay, maybe we create loads of value, but there's one thing we need to focus on. So for example, with us, we've had this recently with our online course, Homeschool. We redesigned it in the summer, and you know, we know the value of it. When people do it, they love it, but we're actually trying to explain it to someone at the beginning, when we have all these elements of, you know, purpose and passion and all these things, trying to understand what is the one thing that makes people buy it, you know, therefore how can we make it clear for people. And actually one of the things that comes up is clarity. So whilst with the Happy Startup School, the one thing that comes out is I'm clearer about my idea. By being clear about my idea, I feel more confident because I can explain it to people. I'm clear about the products I might create as a result. And actually other people can then come into my world and support me or be a customer. So actually clarity leads to all these things. And once we were clear on that ourselves, that helped us understand, okay, I'm not going to focus on the happy bit too much. It's really about you understanding those ideas in your head. And then, you know, almost people self-select by coming on our courses anyway. So they're bought into the happy piece anyway. So we don't need to sort of bash them over the head with it. So yeah, just little insights like that can take even a year or two to understand. And that's the whole point of this canvas, is it's not something that you're done with. You know, it's not like a business plan that you do once and you don't revisit again. It's a dynamic living object and you want it on the wall. Probably the top part of the canvas won't change very much. You know, you don't want to be changing your values weekly, but you know, the bottom part, you know, understanding what's going on there, I think is always good to keep fresh on, and particularly if you want to stay ahead of the game and keep that startup mindset as you grow. The reason we do it in this way is so many people just focus on the solution box and they would just talk for hours about what they're creating. You know, it's an app for this and it's going to do this. They haven't really thought about the customers, you know, what's driving it. So the purpose of this canvas really, if there's one takeaway for people, it's just to think higher than that and think about, you know, the why behind it. And that might lead to more opportunity than they'd otherwise considered. Or if the first idea they launch isn't going to work, like, you know, with us at the Happy Startup School, we started off just doing workshops and realized quite quickly that actually we're just falling into the same trap of just making time. Once you realize that, it's like, okay, given the purpose, what else could we do? So we launched an ebook, and then we did our blog and did summer camps and retreats and online courses. And there's all sorts of things we can do. You know, now it gets much broader than that. We had a, you know, a micro school here last week with some kids, or we could do stuff with existing companies. So there's, you know, you can deliver on the purpose in so many ways. Whereas if you just focused on the one thing at the beginning and that didn't work, you could easily kill the whole business. You know, which is
So as we come to the end of our conversation, I mean, you know, you're part of something. You're creating a movement, and in that sense, very much a leader. But you're also part of a movement that's happening around us. When you look ahead 10 years, does the business landscape look different? Is it kind of like now, but a few more startups, or is there something quite different about what we look like in 10 years' time?
Well, first off, I'm an optimist, so this needs to be given with some context. I hope, and what I see, I think, is this rise of the purpose economy. You know, Aaron Hirst talks about it, but, you know, the world is changing, maybe not as fast as we like. There's so many trends which point to the fact that the world's changing, you know, advancements in technology, young people now having a complete different view of what work looks like, you know. And in my hope is that we move much more towards this nourishing, soulful organization, you know, like Frederick Laloux's Reinventing Organizations, you know, much more where we could just be ourselves at work. And I think I never felt comfortable in those environments where you had to put on a suit and be something you're not. And but there's still a huge part of work that is like that for a lot of people. So I think that's one thing I often lose sight of is, you know, we're surrounded by purpose-driven people doing great things, but there's still a massive chunk of people who are disillusioned to work. So my hope is that people wouldn't accept that, you know, continue to accept that for much longer. And that in 5-10 years, we're seeing organizations that are much more focused on people, much more accepting of people's complex lives and what that entails, you know, not having to tick boxes and adhere to strict rules and guidelines, but actually understanding that, you know, we've got lives too, and the families that we have are important. So I'm also seeing as well less, I would hope there'd be less focus on just growth and big companies. So this kind of cottage industry almost of small businesses. And we're seeing this with our community as an example is, people often ask us, okay, so what are the successful startups that come out of your community? You know, it's a natural thing that people ask when you've got a startup school. And then you're finding yourself still trying to explain that in a way that is the same as every other business school out there, which is there's winners and losers, you know? So, okay, we've got these successes, these heroes who've killed it, and everyone else has kind of fallen by the wayside. Well, actually, it's about this network of small, independent, you know, individuals, businesses, organizations collectively making an impact as a network, rather than, you know, one does really well and one doesn't. So that's what we're seeing, is this connected economy where, you know, it's much more collaborative, much more about sharing, and much more about openness and, you know, being ourselves and not trying to put on this mark.
Do you think that big business, which is where I spend most of my time, can also get on board with that revolution? Or do you think that for most companies, the change in perspective, because it isn't just about doing things differently, is it? It is a fundamental change of beliefs that underpin the business. Do you think it's too great a shift for the big companies that dominate today?
It all comes down to leadership, doesn't it? So you look at Unilever, what's happening there, you know, that's really generally coming from one person, but it's like trying to move a big oil tanker, isn't it, you know, or a cruise ship. You know, you think of a startup like a speedboat, it can be very nimble and it's easy for them to create the culture they want and be innovative, but it's really hard to move a big organization. But I don't think it's impossible, but I just have this sense that, you know, the old companies will die unless they change. You know, it's just a matter of time how long it takes, because there's someone faster, more nimble, probably with a bit more soul, who's going to catch you up, you know, and people are going to want to work for those companies and going to want to buy products from those companies. So the fact that people are being a lot more choosy about how they spend their money tells me that, you know, it's only a matter of time, unless you change, that you can stay alive. And so, yeah, that's the thing we don't quite yet know, is how's that going to manifest itself. When there's competition, you've got two choices. Do you go with Ryanair or someone else? Mm. Just because you suddenly decide that you want to treat your employees better, is it too late? You know, so that's the interesting thing, I think, is seeing how that evolves.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been fascinating.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been a pleasure too.
So that's it. I hope you really enjoyed hearing from Lawrence and our little chat together. If you want to know more about the Happy Startup School and see the business canvas for yourself, just go to happystartupschool.com. happystartupschool.com. The canvas is available as a PDF download for free, and you can also check out their various programs and events, which I highly recommend whether or not you run your own business. It's not necessary to be a small business owner in order to go to their programs. I'll put all the links on our Facebook page, and don't forget that I'm speaking at the Agile Working event in March. Listeners to this podcast can get a discounted price for the event by emailing the organisers and quoting the code Agile Working Event BP17 in the subject line of that email. With information about that and how to stay in touch with us, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
If you would like to attend the Agile Working Event in London on March 29th, 2017, we are able to offer a special price of £249 plus VAT, a saving of £150. This price is available to listeners of the Punks and Suits podcast, and all you need to do is send an email to contact@agileworkingevent.com with the words Agile Working Event BP17 in the subject line. Tell them how many tickets you need and how to contact you, and you will be able to get the special price even when the early bird price has finished at the end of January. For more information about the event, go to www.agileworkingevent.com. Please stay in touch with us on Twitter, Instagram and email, and remember to share this podcast with as many punks and dupes as you know.